Coming up on Chasing the Natty, a couple of weeks ago, we discussed some guys who were great values later on in your drafts. Now, we're going in the other direction as we take a look at 10 players who we think are bad values going really early on in your drafts. We got all of that and more coming right after this.
Look at Chinty go! Breaks a tackle! He's 10! He's touchdown!
Cook's going to throw the deep ball, and Burton has the defense. Touchdown, Luther Burton.
Milrow going to run it again. Got a lane. Kicked in the turbo. Milrow, goodbye. Touchdown, Bama.
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is, as always, Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. Once again, we are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the off season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we are doing here, head on over to campuscanton.com, subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it is CFF, Redraft, Dynasty, we got Devy, C2C, College IDP, College DFS. Really, if you play it, we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed, including our awesome new roster management tool that, frankly, I probably should have put into the show at some point to really kind of show off to you guys how cool this tool is. Maybe I'll do that in a future show here. But like I said, we got everything you need to succeed with all of those different game formats. If you want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me and the show on Twitter. I'm at CFF underscore Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty, and the handsome fellow joining me today is normally my partner in crime for the Defending the Natty podcast, but he is welcomed always back onto CTN here. Nate Marquise, how are you doing today, sir?
Dude, I am awesome. I'm excited. I'm ready to talk about some guys that we're fading here. You know, this is our version of, I guess, the haters ball. Did you ever watch Dave Chappelle? It's probably a little bit before your time.
I mean, I know who Dave Chappelle is, but I'm not going to pretend like I've seen every single one of his sketches or anything.
Yeah, as soon as you were like, hey, we're gonna talk about some guys that were fading or on our don't draft list, the first thing that popped in my mind was the Dave Chappelle skit where he did the haters ball, where it was a bunch of player haters up there just like hate them. Exactly what this show is gonna be.
I would say that's exactly what we're gonna do today. Cause again, we were talking right before the show, like technically some of these guys we're gonna talk about, like I'll probably be like, man, probably just drop them a round or two. They'll probably be fine in ADP at that point. But some of these guys we're really going to lay into today, and I think that'll be quite a bit of fun there. My other favorite part about this show, Nate, is that, again, I'll come up with a show idea, and I'll just kind of throw it into our CFF Slack group chat and be like, hey, who wants to come on to discuss this topic? And the moment I said, hey, I'm going negative this week, Nate, you were like, it was almost like I didn't even have to finish the sentence. And you were like, all right, I'm in.
Yeah. Part of it is that I don't mind throwing some hate around, but the other part is my wife and daughter literally just 20 minutes ago left for the lake. We're recording this on Sunday as we approach the 4th of July, and my in-laws own a little bit of lake property out in Nebraska.
Very nice.
And so each year for the 4th of July, we usually go up there, and they've already taken off. I'm staying behind and going up Wednesday evening, doing a little work this week. And you know, I think the married fathers out there can probably relate to this. I love my wife. I love my daughter more than life itself. But given the opportunity to have, you know, 3 days in a row here by myself, I mean, I work in town. I don't travel for work. My wife doesn't travel for work. So I've always got just like stuff happening in this house. And so man, I tell you what, to have 3 days of peace and do whatever the hell I want is an amount of freedom that I'm looking forward to over these next few days. So, yeah, you said you were wanting to talk about some of this topic here on CTN. I was like, yeah, I'm in. I have free time. I got nothing but a cold beer and time to chat. So let's do it.
Naturally, the moment I heard that Nate was free for 3 days, I had him come onto the show. And in addition, he's ready to grind out a ton of player profiles for our CFF guide over the next couple of weeks. So sorry to take up all your time there. But again, speaking of, I guess we should go ahead and go through some of these announcements here. Let me go ahead. Where is my thing here? There we go. Main segment. We'll go ahead and go through some of these announcements, which, speaking of those player profiles, y'all better get ready for the CFF guide. Again, that is releasing July 7th, 1 week from today, Nate. That feels absolutely crazy for me to say, but we've been grinding it out the last couple months. I just finished up the last of the team profiles yesterday. Yes. So Nate, Chris K, Ethan, all of you guys out there, you better thank me for writing up the UL Monroes and the UConns and UMasses of the world. I slaved away on those. That was not exactly the most fun things to write in the world. I'm completely joking. And I love writing up stuff like that. But you guys have been knocking out those player profiles. Nate, you got your freshman 50 profiles that you will include in the draft. So those of you who have been really asking for some CFF Dynasty content, like, that's pretty much our CFF Dynasty content within the guide itself. Easily the best place to go in terms of looking for guys that'll have year one impacts and probably even bigger year two impacts as well. But we got a lot of stuff in there. Again, all 134 team profiles, 200 plus player profiles. We got ADP sample mock drafts in there built from the ADP. These are not just random mocks that we throw in there. It is literally like basically taking the ADP and turning them into sample mock drafts for you guys. Tons of schedule analysis, both in terms of which teams are going to face which teams have the hardest schedules, easiest schedules. We got Justice, who is our resident defensive expert here on our CFF team. He is putting together a defensive streaming guide for you guys to use each and every week. That way, you know, if you're not grabbing the Alabamas, the Clemsons of the world and everything like that, you can go ahead and find these. You can get these defenses weeks in advance in order to get ahead of your competition. So lots and lots of great stuff. We got projections coming in this year, along with the player profiles. It's another big addition. Really, I wish I could tell you guys everything that's going to be in this guide, but I can't. Otherwise, Nate will be waiting over there for a year and a half for me to get through all of these. Speaking of Nate and I's content, make sure you go and check out the latest episode of Defending the Natty, our CFF Dynasty monthly podcast. We had a great time, Nate and I, bringing on Eric Froton and Josh Chevalier. We did a 3-round freshman and supplemental mock draft. Tons of great analysis in there, like balancing out supplementals versus freshmen, what kind of guys to look for early on in drafts as well. And then last but not least, a couple of quick announcements here. One, check out our live draft streams every Sunday night on the CTN YouTube channel. We have different guests coming on each week. And one thing that we were doing this year is kind of really trying to vary up drafts each week. We did a Power Four only draft with Chris Battistel from Fantasy and Frames a couple of weeks ago. If you're listening to this now, there you will be able to see a G5 only draft with, of course, the guys from G5 Hive joining me for that. We also did a 6-point passing touchdown draft with Eric Froton the week before. And Nate, you and I have got something cooking here towards the end of July. That'll be a ton of fun when it comes to those. So with that, make sure you go check those out. And then, of course, again, more CFF Dynasty stuff here. Make sure you go check out my rankings available on the NIL tier for Campus of Canton, which is $7.99 per month, $79.99 per year. Enough spiels, Nate. Let's get into some hating here. I say we start with the guys at the top. Again, we'll go in ADP order. I thought about going like back and forth between my guys, your guys, but I'm like, no, it makes sense to kind of just go through the highest rated guys in ADP all the way to the lowest ones. We're focusing on guys here that are going in the first 10 rounds, because I didn't really think it was really necessary for us to go look at guys who are going round 15 and being like, no, he should be going round 25. That didn't make any sense. These are guys that you're hitting on early. These are guys that are foundational to your team. And Nate, you started us off with a doozy here, man. You're not only hitting a first round guy here, but you're going after a guy that I've personally been trying to get in the first round. The last couple of drafts that I've been in, he's been taking a pick before every draft. You're saying your boy, Luther Burden, a guy that you loved last year, Nate, is going too high at the 105 there. He finished as a wide receiver 14 last year. Same offensive coordinator, same system and everything. Feels like it should be a pretty safe pick here, Nate, but what are you hating on Luther Burden for?
Yeah, I mean, let me at least preface this by saying, okay, these are guys that we're going to hate on a little bit today that we think are going too high. It doesn't mean that we don't think they should be drafted. It doesn't
Oh,
mean
for
that we
sure.
don't think, yeah, I mean, obviously, Luther Burden, if he's on my roster, I still am very happy to have Luther Burden as one of my central, core players. But this is a guy that's going as wide receiver two, the fifth overall pick on average. Lately, I've seen him go, I think maybe due to some of the injury concerns around Tet McMillen, I've seen him go as high as third overall in some drafts, behind only Ginty and Gordon, obviously. And I just think that's too high. I think he's, and again, I'm nitpicking a little bit, but I think he's wide receiver four. At least that's where I have him ranked. I've thought about making him wide receiver five in my rankings, but I think he's a clear tier behind Tet McMillen and Torrey Horton, in my opinion. I think he should be going more in that group around later, round and a half, around where Royals and Ricky White, Tez Johnson, Joey Hobert. I think that's really his group, not that group with Tet and Torrey Horton. I don't think people realize how kind of average he was down the stretch last year. I mean, if you look at it in half point PPR leagues, over his last 7 games, he averaged 12.4 points per game. Like you talked about on the season, he was wide receiver 14. 12.4 points per game over the second half of the season last year. I mean, that's fine, but we're talking about a guy that's going potentially number three overall. I don't know that he's technically worth that. And let me just throw my tinfoil hat on for a second here and get a little weird. He is always kind of dinged up. He's never had any major injuries, but he's constantly banged up because he does return punts. He does touch the ball a fair amount. But I think there's a possibility that if Mizzou loses a few games by midseason, that he could potentially shut it down in order to not hurt his draft stock. And I just think that there's a little bit too much risk for where he's currently been taken. Do you hate it?
I don't hate it per se. Again, I as I mentioned before, I've been trying to get Luther Burden in the first round, but that's also mostly been because like I at one point was like, oh, I don't have a Luther Burden share. I should probably like aim for Luther Burden here, even if I don't want to take him. I think it was like fifth pick overall. I was like, eh, you know what? Like, why not take Luther Burden here, the fifth overall pick? It's one draft. And then he goes off at 104. And then the next draft, I'm like, okay, I'm at the 104. I'll get Luther Burden here. He goes off at 103 in that draft.
Yeah.
And then I had one where I was 111. He made it all the way to 110, and then he gets picked there. And I'm just like, all right, well, I'm just never getting Luther Burden now.
Right.
But no, I kind of get it, right? Because again, like I can see him being around the same range as Jalen Rose. Jalen Rose, again, he's going wide receiver four in drafts. Again, 111 is typically his ADP. I can see the argument for Burden kind of being back towards there. Especially if you're going to make the argument for one Horton being above Burden, which I can totally understand, right? Like, as much as we talk about Burden being a safe pick with the same system and everything, Horton's probably the same way, and he's got even less guys coming back that'll be around him. The other thing is, I can see the argument for running backs like DJ Giddens, Amarian Hampton, Darius Taylor, if you want to talk upside with him going over him. I would honestly even, I can see the argument for a guy like Devin Neal, if you're talking about just safety wise, going above him as well. And that does definitely kind of push him back into that first round. I think that this is like him going on average fifth overall pick is a combination of just people knowing his name, right? Whether you're playing CFF, Devy, or anything like that, he's a guy that like if you're playing Devy and you're coming into CFF, you know his name. You're gonna like you know that's a safe pick versus if you're looking at the rankings, you're like, yeah, technically the rankings are saying I should go with Torrey Horton, but like I'm not as familiar with him, so I might go Luther Burden instead.
I mean, I get it. The floor is very high with him. We don't have to project Luther Burden. We've seen him do it. We know he's got the same offensive coordinator. They don't have potentially the same running game this year, so maybe they do lean on the pass a little bit more. Even though they're in the SEC, they play probably the weakest schedule of any of the SEC teams, so that's not really a deterrent like maybe some other programs in the SEC. I get it. The floor is very high. I'm just personally of the mind that if I can pass on him, get a decent running back, some of those guys that you mentioned, and there's a legit chance that when it comes back around to me in the back half of the second round, that I can get another wide receiver that's in that tier that I think he belongs in, I think that's a better play, in my opinion, than getting him.
No, for sure. Like, look at some of the guys that come here in the back end of the second round. Again, Evan Stewart, Tej Johnson, Sean Atkins, Pafele Ashlock, Joey Hobert, Xavier Restrepo. And I know you're a big fan of Kevin Concepcion as well. Like, those are all guys that go on that 2-3 turn. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
I think your argument is very valid there. And then again, to your point about him kind of going down slightly the second half of the season, I don't think it was a huge downgrade, but like through week six, Luther Burden was wide receiver 2 on the year, and he finished as wide receiver 14. Now,
right.
What was me that like, if I can get the wide receiver 14 in CFF, you're doing really, really well. But even so, like, that's just kind of to your point that, you know, definitely kind of backed off of him a little bit. But that's also when Cody Schrader also went absolutely nuclear as well, which back to your point about them not having the same running game, maybe that's the case.
Yep.
Let's move on to the second guy here. Let's go talk Taj Brooks. I'll be real. This is one that Nate also kind of threw on here, but, you know, I'm including him as well because, quite frankly, I really thought that with all of the hate that Nate's kind of been sprinkling in, some other guys have been sprinkling in throughout the offseason, that we would see Taj Brooks' ADP kind of drop. If anything, we're kind of seeing it rise a little bit. Now, granted, I think some of that is some early first-round guys that people were taking, like Kevin Concepcion and Mecca Egbuka. They've kind of dropped down. Some of the other running backs have kind of started dropping out of the first round, like RJ Harvey, obviously, at UCF. And that kind of moves Brooks up a little bit. And on paper, this seems like an extremely safe play, right? Brooks finished as the RB26 last year. The guy was averaging over 30 touches per game. That after Shuck went down, right? To start the season, he only had 12 touches per game, but Shuck goes down. Bear Morton comes in. We see the entire offensive strategy shift. Shuck's gone. Bear Morton returns. It really seems like a scenario that is hard not to like what we are seeing, right? Again, it got over 19 touches in every game after week 2. Lowest yardage total he got was 97 yards versus Texas. Again, it's just super high floor, right? The problem is we know what Zach Kittley wants to do, right? We know the offense that Texas Tech ran with last year isn't the kind of system he wishes he could go with. Health at quarterback has really, really hindered the offense that he has wanted to do over the last couple of years. I mean, clearly, like, he wanted Tyler Shuck out there, and Shuck just couldn't stay healthy. And I do think that Baron Morton, for the last couple of years, just has been a minor disappointment for him. But now, Morton's coming back. Obviously, he has some offseason surgeries that he is dealing with, so that is something to consider as well. But you would think that, you know, Kittley's going into the season for the first time with a quarterback that he's had the whole offseason to work with. And last year had more to do with the fact that, you know, with the health of the quarterback, they had to run Brooks 30 times a game. Like, it was a deal where, you know, he was durable, solid production. No reason not to do that in a game when you can do that. So what happens now if the passing game attack finally does wake up? Whether that's Morton staying healthy and being a better quarterback, or he gets replaced by, like, Will Hammond at some point during the season, right? Brooks' value drops off massively at that point. That passing game is going. We don't see him get 30 touches per game. And some could say, like, oh, he could be used in the passing game. And I'm here to tell you, no, he cannot. Brooks' receiving profile is absolutely horrendous. His ADOT last year was 0.1 yards. He had tons of passes behind the line of scrimmage. He's not a downfield target for this Texas Tech offense whatsoever. And his yards per reception was 2.4, so he wasn't gaining many yards after catching the ball as well. In addition to all this, you look at the history of Zach Kittley's running backs, right? Brooks led the team in 2022 with 147 carries. In 2021, the leading back for Western Kentucky only saw 101 carries. In 2019, Houston Christian's top running back got 132 carries. Now, given what Brooks did last year, I think we can still lock in Brooks for 200 carries. But even with everything going right last year, like, just on top of everything else, Brooks still only finishes the RB28. Now, you can point to the fact he only had 10 touchdowns versus 1,500 yards that he got on the ground. But the thing that kept him from scoring more touchdowns last year, Baron Morton, is back and is starting full time. And so, overall, I think kind of the main deal with Taj Brooks is at the 202, you are looking at drafting him at his ceiling, right? You're looking at drafting Taj Brooks at his ceiling, and I think that's a dangerous game to play in CFF. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of the points you've brought up. And I do feel like, you know, I know that Andrew Katz has brought this up on burning the red shirt. I think some of the fantasy points of guys have brought this up as well, too. It's just, it's not what Zach Kelly wants to do, right? I mean, in a perfect world, if his quarterback stays healthy, they're going to throw the ball a lot. Now, I mean, we can all break out our crystal ball and see, okay, is Baron Morton actually going to stay healthy? Texas Tech just can't seem to keep any quarterbacks healthy. So I get the concerns, and I get the people that want to invest in Brooks and thinking that things are going to look the same next, you know, this year in 2024. It's just, it's wild. I've never seen a situation in where, you know, I mean, him and Sir Roderick Thompson were an even 50-50 split. I mean, dead yep. even. Almost 691 yards versus 684 yards. Both of them had 7 touchdowns. They were within 8 touches of each other. That doesn't happen usually where one guy goes away and you're like, okay, I'm going to consume 100% yeah. of the touches from that guy that just went away. We just don't see that very often. Now, they didn't bring anybody in from the portal that scares you. That so I do think he's still going to be a major factor. And I understand taking him in rounds, you know, like late in round 2, round 3, something like that. But the fact that he's going, you know, often at the end of round 1 just kind of does kind of blow my mind a little bit. Because if the quarterback room is healthy, there's just no way in my mind he's going to touch the ball 250 times like we saw last year. You talked about it. I mean, you, at Western Kentucky, I think like the leading, what was the leading rusher over there? Noah Whittington, who we know is actually a pretty damn good running back. He's doing well at Oregon. 101 carries.
Yep.
617 yards, 2 touchdowns. That's what we'd seen from Zach Kittley up until last year. I just don't know if his hand is forced if he's going to ride Brooks to the same volume that we've seen. So yeah, I agree with you on this one. I like him. I don't like him in the first round.
First or even early second round there. I can kind of see it if you're pairing him up with like another strong running back, right? If you were to able to somehow get like Amarian Hampton towards the end of the first round or DJ Giddens.
Yeah.
Or you paired him up with Devin Neal. I could see like that strategy kind of trying to hit two strong running backs early on. Strategy I personally like, but even still, like, again, looking at the ADP, right, we're looking at, like, Taj Brooks. Devin Neal goes 0.2 ahead of him in ADP, so basically the same pick. I'll take Devin Neal over him every time. Phil yeah. Maffa, bit more of a projection pick, so I can kind of understand if you want to just go with a guy you've seen before, maybe go Brooks over him. But, like, Jaden Ott, I think I'd go Jaden Ott over
yeah.
Taj
yeah.
Brooks at this point. It's just, there's other guys I'd rather have.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. And it hurts me because I loved Burden last year. Here I am saying he's going too high. I liked Taj Brooks quite a bit last year. He's a guy that I've always thought he's a good player if he could get the volume. Well, he got the volume last year. I don't know if it's repeatable.
I agree. All right, Nate, let's go to another one of your guys here. Quinton Cooley, RB16 in our June ADP here, typically going off the board around the end of the third round here. We got 310 in our June ADP right here. Finished as the RB28 last season. Nate, what's going on with Cooley? Why do you think he's going too high here?
Yeah, I think the main thing I can do here is just promote what the work is that the guys over at the G5 Hive have been doing, Luke and Justice, because one of their first interviews was with the Liberty Sea of Red guy that basically is the beat writer there for Liberty. And if you just go back and listen to that episode, he said basically what we were all kind of thinking, and that it's going to be very hard for Quinton Cooley to duplicate what he did last year, which was an incredible year, right? 1,400 yards, 16 oh, yeah. touchdowns. That is big time. But they just, he had mentioned it on that podcast. They're just not expecting to give him. The staff has been pretty vocal about that. They don't want him to have that same level of volume. Vaughn Blue is a guy, as a freshman last year that garnered a ton of buzz last offseason, right? I think mm-hmm. you remember, you know, him being hyped up quite a bit. He got injured. It was either like right before the season or week one or something like that. He was basically out the entire year. He's going to be back from injury. And I just, you know, I think they want him and Billy Lucas to be a little bit more involved in the offense this year. So this is just similar to what we just talked about with Taj Brooks. I like the system. Although, we've seen Willie Korn and this staff kind of split things up among the running backs, at least they did at Coastal Carolina. I just think we see a little bit more of that this year.
Well, the other thing with Coastal, like you bring it up with Coastal Carolina, we saw Coastal Carolina year after year. That staff wouldn't it, just because something was occurring the year before does not mean that they were afraid to change it up the next year, right? It was very hard to predict Coastal Carolina running backs year to year while Jamie Chadwell and his staff were over there. Like, I think you absolutely could see a very similar thing happen here, where just because Cooley got 200 attempts last year doesn't mean that they tried to back that off a little bit. Vaughn Blue had only 17 carries last year. Who's to say that he doesn't see that get up to 70, 80, and a good chunk of those come away from Quentin Cooley. Again, Vaughn Blue's got a really good size. I could totally see them trying to split that backfield up a little bit more here. I will say Cooley's going a little bit better in terms of ADP compared to where he was earlier this offseason. I remember him going in like the round two, early three range. ADP has him here at 310, but I know for a fact I've seen him get as late as round four and five sometimes. I think that's fine in terms of if that's where you want to take him. I've definitely taken him in that range trying to get like a solid RB3 option there. But I agree with you, Nate. Again, if he starts creeping back up here into the third round, I'm not going to get it.
What are your thoughts on another just kind of thing that popped in my head with there's a legit chance that Liberty could go undefeated this year, and be that team. I think them and a handful of other teams, Boise, Memphis, teams like that, are going to be in the mix for that G5 spot in the playoffs, the automatic bid. If they do go undefeated, there's probably going to be, and they got a lot of money in order to promote over there at Liberty. There's going to be some kind of a groundswell, I would think, for Caden Salter to push for the Heisman, right? Or at
Oh,
least
yeah.
to like be there at in New York at the, make that appearance. Because that would be a nice feather in that staff's cap if they could get a Heisman appearance at least for Caden Salter. That's another, I mean, 16 touchdowns. That's tough to repeat year to year like Cooley had last year. Who's to say Salter doesn't see an uptick in his rushing touchdowns just to try to bump up that Heisman profile.
I agree 100%, especially with them being playoff contenders, right? Like, you know for a fact that ESPN and anybody who runs these things, they're going to want to try to promote, like, look at us, including G5 High, or G5 High. I'm just so used to saying that now.
Yeah, that
Look
would
at
be
us.
awesome if they start promoting the G5
That would be incredible. No, but like,
High.
look at us promoting all these G5 guys now. Like, we're so inclusive now. We're going to have the Liberty running back. And yeah, 100% that could end up impacting Cooley as well. And also, again, like you mentioned, like a lot of what Cooley did last year is because the rest of that running back room got banged up. We have no clue what that running back room is going to look like when everybody's fully healthy. Definitely is a big risk here. And looking at some of the guys that are going around him, we're about to talk about a guy here in a second that's going right next to him, so I won't say that. But this is really, in my opinion, where like the safe running backs are off the board already. Like Mekhi Hughes, Malik Sherrod, they come off a couple of picks before this point. And then all the guys behind it really start, in my opinion, that's where things started getting just a little bit riskier. Looking at Mario Anderson, like guys we like, but definitely riskier. Mario Anderson, Gavin Sawchuk, Donovan Edwards, Quinshon Judkins, Abu Samah. Cooley, I think, because he feels the safest among those guys, kind of gets a bump in ADP here.
I think that's fair, and their schedule is soft as wet
Charmin.
paper. I mean, it's yeah, sure. I mean, it is Charmin soft, and we don't have, similar to Luther Burden, we don't have to project with Quentin Cooley. So I get it. He does have a safe floor. I think 900 yards and 10 touchdowns is pretty much his floor. I mean, that's kind of worst case scenario for him. So if you do invest in him, I get it. I just don't know. I think we're kind of, at least in some drafts, I've seen him go like early round three, mid round three, and you're kind of drafting based off what he did last year that I'm not sure is repeatable.
Oh, I agree 100%. Because again, similar to Taj Brooks, everything went right for him and he still finished RB28. Now, granted, again, like 1,300 yards, only 10 touchdowns during the regular season. You could argue a couple more touchdowns go his way. He finishes much higher, but even still, not worth drafting at the ceiling, in my opinion. Nate, throwing over to you again because you also wanted to talk about one CJ Baxter, running back out of Texas, currently going in our June ADP as RB17. end of the third round as well, pretty much right in the same range as Cooley, that 310 range. What's going on here, Nate? Why do you think Baxter's going too high? In my opinion, or my question for you is, where should he be going?
Texas hate. That's my favorite kind of hate, really, is what this is. Any chance I get to hate for an episode, and you better believe I'm going to pick out a Longhorn and throw him on the list. Now, so I do feel like CJ Baxter, we have started to see him probably slide a little bit. I think if we ran the ADP from April, May, probably a little bit higher than what we're seeing now as far as him being the running back 17. I do feel like he was probably going earlier. Here's the deal. I want a Sark running back just as bad as everybody else, right? I mean, that's money. That's 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. Book it. Guarantee it. Sark does it every year. It's the reason why people were trying to draft both CJ Baxter and Jonathan Brooks last year. But my concern is Jadon Blue and Trey Wisner, for that matter, have been mentioned far more by this staff this entire spring. In fact, Blue was even compared by the running backs coach to Jahmyr Gibbs, which just blows my mind, right? I mean, that sounds fun, right? And Blue was a highly touted recruit himself, not quite on the same level as Baxter, but not far below. But here's my biggest concern, and I wrote about this recently or not too long ago in an article. Baxter was just bad last year, right? I mean, out of the three running backs that got meaningful carries for him, Blue, Brooks, and Baxter, he was third in all of the statistical success categories that I care about, as far as like broken tackle rate, breakaway percentage, yards after contact per attempt. Those are things that I look at that usually are a pretty good predictor of success if volume becomes a thing for that player. So the fact that he wasn't very good in those categories concerns me. And I just think he's being drafted as though he's the clear-cut RB1 there. And I don't think that is necessarily the case. The staff has been pretty open in saying, we've got a couple of guys we really like, and we're going to run this committee for a while, and then they'll probably settle on one guy, and that'll be your 1,000-yard back. I just don't know if it's him.
No, I agree with you 100%, because I was just adding up the fantasy totals that we saw after Jonathan Brooks went down last year. Like, Jonathan Brooks finishes the RB24 last year, despite missing two games, was RB7 through week 11. So like you mentioned there, that right there just shows how incredible this Sarkisian running back is. And we saw what Bijan was able to do last couple of years as well.
I'm still bummed Jonathan Brooks isn't coming back.
I know.
I owned that guy everywhere. And I felt so bad for him when he did tear his ACL. And I was also like, I don't know, maybe he comes back now. And then he left. Good for him, though. He's going to make a lot of money.
No, for sure. Again, he still got drafted very highly. Now he went to the Panthers, so that's its own level of punishment. But
sorry to interrupt.
No, it's all good. But like, I went back and like added up their points because I was wondering to myself, like, okay, like, yeah, I treat Baxter as like the clear cut RB2 there last year, and he was in terms of carries for a long time. Like, he was the second guy out there. But I was wondering, like, Blue also had himself some really good games as well. In the five games after Brooks went down, Baxter scored 60.9 fantasy points, and Blue scored 60.4. So again, obviously fantasy points are not the end-all be-all, but it really does kind of show how much those two really kind of split things up. They didn't just have Baxter immediately take over. Now, granted, to that point and to a lot of your points about the statistics that you brought up, Nate, he was a true freshman last year. At the end of the day, right, like, there's going to be improvements on some level. And sure. Players
can get better.
And if he can get better, that absolutely could drive him to be the RB1 this year as well. And the fact that, again, similar to kind of our Ruben Obens discussion we had a couple weeks ago, the fact that he was the clear-cut RB2 behind Brooks last year does kind of show that, you know, the staff knows what they have in him. They know that, like, he should be that next guy up eventually. The fact that he overtook Blue and carries for the longest time says a lot. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, yes, totally agree there. I think my eyes tell me that Jadon Blue is the better player. Just watching him play, what I've seen, but the staff tells me they like Baxter more. I mean, if we all can remember back to week one, who was the guy that got the start? It wasn't Jonathan Brooks. It was CJ Baxter, right? I mean, CJ Baxter is the first. Here's a funny stat. He is the first Sarkisian running back ever to start week one and not run for 1,000 yards. He's the first one. All the other ones have done it. And so CJ Baxter, by him losing his job, it became the first one. But yeah, the staff clearly, and when Brooks went down, Baxter then became the first guy up. But Jaden Blue was right there with him, pretty even.
No, for sure. But even if you look at their touch rate, right? Like Baxter was the guy that would get 18, 20 carries whenever they did rely on one guy, versus Blue, I don't think ever got above 10 carries in a single game.
Right. So. Yep.
One last point I want to make on this, and I personally have drafted CJ Baxter in quite a few leagues, and I'm okay with him here in the third round for the most part. Obviously, he was going in like the second round at one point, too high there. But Nate, have you ever played baseball? Did you play baseball growing up?
Yeah, I did.
So like you know like
I pitched a no hitter once as a little leaguer.
Oh really?
It's my claim to fame. It's nice. Pretty much the greatest athletic moment of my life.
I did not know that. That's actually very incredible. But you know the basic idea, right, behind setting a lineup, right? You have your two most sure hitters of just getting guys on base. Yep. Those are your first two guys. That's the same thing like in a draft, right? If you're going to draft running back, you grab two guys in the first two rounds, like you say, like a DJ Giddens, and you grab a Devin Neal or something like that, right? Two guys that you're for sure like, all right, that's 1,000 yards right there. Yep. If you're going to hit with that third guy, you better hit with a home run guy. And I do think CJ Baxter is that third home run guy.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. Like, that's your power hitter. That's your guy that if he hits it over the fence, you're getting in three runs. I'm okay with that strategy. But otherwise, I would not draft CJ Baxter as your first or second option at running back at all. He is the perfect option to try to put yourself over the top if you do go RB to start. Otherwise, I'm not touching him.
I will say most drafts that I've been in, you know, mainly just best ball up to this point, the people that draft CJ Baxter usually will try to draft Jadon Blue.
I agree.
Later on in the draft, they'll reach for him a couple of rounds early in order to secure that Texas running back backfield. And I think that's a really wise move.
I agree 100%. All right, let's move on to our next guy here. Nate, you had a lot of problem with some of the running backs here today. I noticed that was kind of a theme with your guys, but I'm about to start laying into some of these receivers, especially the ones going here in that kind of round 4 to 7 range. And the first guy I have up here is Trey Harris, the wide receiver out of Ole Miss, going typically around the end of the fourth round, sometimes getting into that fifth round there, ADP of 48.3. I've been waiting on Trey Harris's ADP to drop for some time now, and he refuses to go down. I do not get people's desire to draft him as their wide receiver two option for their teams. Like, he's going again, his ADP there is wide receiver 18. I don't have him in my top 50 in my rankings.
Ooh, wow.
I am now I'm so out on Trey Harris. Yes, his start to 2023 was absolutely amazing. That four touchdown game against Mercer, again, just let that sink in again. Four touchdown game against Mercer was so much fun in week one.
Wait, you telling me that they're not going to get to face Mercer every day?
They're not going to get to face Mercer every single week. But even still, like after that point, he got nicked up, and Harris defenders will ride or die on the fact that he got nicked up. He was not the same after he got hurt early on in the season. On one level, yes, you're correct, right? We see this happen before with guys like Jamari Thrash last year was off to a phenomenal start, gets hurt, staff keeps playing him for whatever reason, throwing him out there as a decoy, and he's just not the same, even though he is technically playing. But I do think that in the 11 games that Harris did play in last year, or 11 regular season games that he played in last year, I still think that Harris is getting hyperinflated by a couple of games throughout last season. Like, let's look at his target numbers from last year, right? Harris saw 74 targets in 11 games, which means he was on pace for 81 targets in 12 games. Just in principle, that is not nearly the volume I want to see.
That's a problem.
That's not the volume I want to see in somebody I'm drafting in the top four rounds as my one or two option at receiver, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're also relying on Harris to continue to have the efficiency he had last year. Harris was averaging above 19 yards per catch, sometimes above 25 yards per catch in his first five games over and over and over again, which is clearly unsustainable, as we saw later down the stretch when he was only averaging 14.7 yards per catch, which is still quite good, don't get me wrong, but it's clearly not that efficiency he had early on in the year. In addition, those four touchdowns I mentioned earlier in that first game against Mercer, Yeah, he scored 4 touchdowns on his first 9 targets of the season, then proceeded to only score 4 touchdowns in his remaining 65. You're talking about a dude that is just completely and utterly inconsistent. After he got nicked up, he had multiple games of 30 yards per less against the likes of Arkansas, Georgia, Mississippi State. You can excuse the Georgia game, fine, whatever. But yeah. Again, Arkansas, Mississippi State, there's not much excuse there. And you can say it was because he was hurt, but how come during that same stretch he also had games of 101 and 213 yards, games where he had 12 targets, 14 targets? I mean, look at this here, right? LSU, 12 targets. Very next week, Arkansas, 5 targets. Auburn, 7 targets. Vanderbilt, 8 targets. So good volume, don't get me wrong. Texas A&M, 14 targets. But again, like, there were just unproductive games during that stretch. And even then, it all adds up to a 74-target season, which is just not what you want in the top 4 rounds. None of this even addresses the fact that Lane Kiffin also brings in Antoine Wells, who admittedly has had his own injury issues, but also fills a very similar role on the outside that Harris does, right? Part of what made Harris great last year is because he's clearly the best option on the outside for Ole Miss, right? Now they bring in Antoine Wells, which, if healthy, has already shown at an SEC level can be very productive. In addition to that, historically, Charlie Weiss, Lane Kiffin's offensive coordinator here, just straight up does not have an alpha wide receiver. Even last year, when people were thinking of Harris as the alpha wide receiver in Ole Miss, he tied Jordan Watkins in terms of targets. Now, Watkins had an additional game on him, but even still, like, that still shows that a lot of it is you're betting on efficiency there compared to the efficiency that Jordan Watkins had. You add Wells into that starting group, and I think you're going to see those targets distributed even more. Overall, my argument here for Trey Harris. Harris is being drafted as high as he is based on a bunch of what could have beens on an injury that clearly wasn't bad enough to keep him off the field, but was apparently bad enough to keep him from being a top-end wide receiver for CFF. And this idea that he's a clear alpha in a system that just doesn't typically produce an alpha, no way ever am I touching him as my second wide receiver option. Heck, I'm not touching him at all this year if this is how high he's going to go. He'd need to go, let's see, I have a wide receiver 53. He'd need to fall to the 13th round for me to consider him.
You're not going to get a whole lot of Trey Harris shares. I don't think I will. That was a really, like, again, I'm referencing the Chappelle skit. That was a really strong hater speech right there. I look at Trey Harris's game log and it's psychotic. It's psychotic. Like, this is a guy against LSU and A&M had like 14 and 15 targets, 213 yards against A&M, 153 yards against LSU. And obviously, I mean, again, against Mercer, he goes off for 4 touchdowns the very next week. Maybe it was due to injury or whatever, 2 catches, 55 yards, right? And then it's just, you know, he's got these, like, as soon as LSU, he goes bananas, 153 yards and a touchdown. You're like, all right, great. He's got Arkansas next week. Arkansas, 1 catch, 26 yards. Okay. Auburn, he goes for 100 yards. Great. He's got Vandy the next week. I'm going to throw him in my lineup, 67 yards, no touchdowns. What are we doing here? Like, you know, I mean, he's one of those guys I'm not going to have shares of either. Just like you, I've got him. I've kind of jostled him around my rankings. I think I've settled with him. I've decided being like in my late 30s. Okay. So not high enough to where I'm going to end up with any shares of Trey Harris. And he's somebody I've tweeted about that I'm also kind of fading, but he's somebody I would only be comfortable owning in a best ball league where I don't have to decide when the hell he's going to go bananas. He's going to have some incredible games. There's no doubt in my mind. When that happens, I have no clue. And I agree with you there with that wide receiver room. And I don't even know if you mentioned it, but pre-scoring, I think is going to be a big factor too.
I agree.
There's just a lot of cooks in the kitchen there, but I do think that this is an offense at Ole Miss. I want pieces of, right. I do think they're going to throw the ball around. It would not shock me if Dart is a top 5 QB in the country as far as yards per game, that type of thing, passing yards per game. So I think they'll throw it around. The schedule's favorable for him, but man, it's psychotic trying to guess when to start him.
But Nate, Trey Harris is going off at 412 here, right? Yeah. Where do you think Antoine Wells is going off?
I mean, I assume quite a bit further back.
Wide receiver 61 in round 15. If I'm going to take a shot on this Ole Miss offense, I'm going to take that shot, right?
I don't know, man. I'm torn because I want pieces of this offense, but I don't believe so much in Trey Harris. I don't love the fact that Antoine Wells was – now I get it. He was injured all of last year. There's a lot of gray area there on just how injured he might have been, right? I know that that's been discussed. But I think he's a good – I do. I agree with you. I think that Juice Wells is a really talented wide receiver. Would not shock me at the end of the day if Juice Wells actually outproduces Trey Harris. So therein lies the problem with drafting him at wide receiver 18. I mean, you're looking at him as your wide receiver two at worst case scenario if you're taking him.
And he may not be wide receiver two on his own team.
Right.
and then as well, you mentioned Caden Prescore. He's going off at 1507 in ADP right now, tight end 14. So like
that's probably the one I like the most. Yeah, like you, I like
take
that
the letter. Shot. Take the shots there. Don't try to reach for a guy in the fourth round here. Enough of my hate here. Actually, no, not enough of my hate. I'm going to hate on some more wide receivers here. So up next, another one of my guys here, Jamal Pritchett, going off in the middle of the fifth round here, ADP of 53.8. You're talking wide receiver 21. Pritchett, to me, feels like one of the kind of growing traps in CFF leagues. We have a couple of these every year in CFF leagues, and it really happens a lot with wide receivers that were kind of projecting either because they had a good year, a good finish to the year previous, or obviously the top guy before then leaves. Pritchett really kind of starts feeling like the kind of guy that is going to fall into that category, right? Now I get why we're shooting our shots here, right? Colin Lacey finished as a top 12 wide receiver in CFF last year. Before that, Jalen Wayne was a serviceable option for CFF, and before that, we saw Jalen Tolbert go nuclear for 2 years. So again, I get it. I get why we're shooting for this system. And to make matters even more enticing, again, going back to that archetype I was just talking about a second ago, Pritchett had himself a great bowl game. 10 targets, 7 catches, 113 yards, 2 touchdowns, during which he was moved to the slot where Colin Lacey did a ton of his damage last year, right? So everything seems like it's coming together for Pritchett to kind of take over Lacey's role. Should be a great option for CFF. And if that was all that we had to worry about, I would love him here in the fifth round. There's only one problem, and that name is Devin Voisin. Going into last year, Voisin was who many of us expected to be USA's top receiver, as he was the number two guy behind Jalen Wayne, played on the outside, which is where we saw Jalen Tolbert go nuclear for 2 years, right? Got off to a slow start. To start the year, he had a singular catch for 7 yards and a touchdown versus Tulane, but Tulane had a pretty good defense, so I'm going to excuse that a little bit. Game two, Voisin was off to a pretty hot start. 5 targets, 4 receptions, 70 yards, and that was only halfway through the game before he suffered his season-ending injury. Now, Voisin is set to return. He's had plenty of time to recover. This is an early season injury. This is not like an end-of-season injury, right? And given his status going into last year, I do think it leaves some doubt going into the down in the air regarding whether or not Pritchett really is the clear wide receiver atop the pecking order for the Jaguars, right? Thus, with that kind of hanging over everything, with Pritchett kind of being taken here as wide receiver 21, I don't think it makes any sense really to have him as your second option in leagues when, similar to Trey Harris, you're not even sure if he'll be the number one guy for his own offense. And then even still, just this is kind of a slight tangent here, but like looking at the other guys in this range, I think there's just so many other safer options, in my opinion, like Rock Taylor at Memphis, Elik Iomanor at Stanford, Kyron Lacey at LSU, Derwin Burgess at Georgia Southern. These are all just guys that I would rather have, and that's just the wide receivers. This is a great range for quarterback that I'd rather go in. This is where you can get Jackson Dart, Nico Iamaleva, Garrett Green, KJ Jefferson, Avery Johnson, like, I don't know, just where Pritchett's going compared to other guys in his own position, just other guys in terms of the board of CFF in general, I cannot justify taking him in the fifth round. Nate, what do you think of Pritchett?
Yeah, so I can't hate on it. I can't hate on him too much. I have, you know, he's going as wide receiver 21. I currently have him ranked as wide receiver 25. So I'm a little bit lower than where he's going, but I'm not far off, right? That's in the ballpark. I've talked about how I do like Devin Voisin. I think if he's healthy, I do think there's a chance that Voisin is the wide receiver one in this room. Again, I'll continue to reference him here when we're talking about these G5 guys. If you're not listening to the G5 Hive, you're missing out because they've talked to South Alabama here, and the guy was very, very vocal about how Devin Voisin could be playing that slot role. Even Ooh. Though Pritchett played it in the bowl game, that they're expecting Voisin to actually play the slot, which Colin Lacey, you know, will fill the void from when Colin Lacey left. And he could be the guy, but again, it's hard to invest in guys that tore their ACL last year, even if it was fairly Agreed. Early on, and expect them to, be real big factors this year. We got burnt by that a lot last year. Just see Utah. That's probably the biggest concern there. I get it. I get why people want to invest in Pritchett. They want that South Alabama. It's been consistently since Major Applewhite's been there. We've seen a strong wide receiver one there. But I also agree with you. I'm probably not going to own a whole lot of Pritchett just because I think it's a little bit of fool's gold in knowing exactly where he stands in the pecking order because Voisin went down with that injury.
I definitely agree. And again, to your point as well, like the way I talk about Pritchett and the way I talk about Trey Harris are two very different deals here, right? Like Harris, I think, should be falling to the round 13 range. I think he's a terrible value right now. Mm-hmm. Pritchett, it's more of like, I think people should be aware of Voisin, and I think because of that, he should be going, I'd say probably a round or two later. Yeah, like he's going 506 right now. I have him as wide receiver 27 in my rankings. That would put him around the middle of the seventh round, which again, looking at the guys going in that range, I'd be willing to take the shot on him there, especially if I needed some upside shots at wide receiver. I would feel more comfortable there.
The thing that fascinates me most about Jamal Pritchett is this dude's like 5'8", 5'9", 165 pounds. He played the boundary every game last year besides the bowl game. This dude at 5'9" was rocking it on the boundary.
Dude, some people just got hops.
And I'm just like, that blows my mind. You just never see a tiny dude out on the boundary. And so good for him. I don't know like where to, you know, how confident I am in him this year, but that's really cool.
No, dude, like you're talking about your little league stuff. And I'll talk about my glory days playing rec soccer here. middle school recreational soccer. No, but we on our recreational team, we had a goalie. I think his name was Alexander. He was like
it's a great goalie name.
A solid 6 inches shorter than everybody on our team, and so and people would look at our coach and be like, "You're crazy for having him in the goalie. Like he's such a small target. Like you need a dude with like wide arms, can reach all
the wall."
I've never seen a kid be able to jump like Alexander could, dude. Like he literally could go. He could cover every inch of that goalie, despite being shorter than everybody else. So that's cool. Enough peeking into my previous lives as a recreational soccer star. Definitely was not a star. I played defense. all right, let's move on to our next guy here. Ironically enough, let's talk about another South Alabama wide receiver here, but one that was formerly one. Colin Lacey, wide receiver out of now Louisville. Lacey, as I mentioned before, finished as a wide receiver 12 last year's season, so it made sense, right, with that great production for him to try to move himself up to the Power 4 level, you know, take advantage of that, try to build an NFL career out of this. I'm already normally anti-G5 transfer already, but given that Louisville already did show last year that they can get some production out of their stud G5 transfers, basically Jamari Thrash, who had games of 24, 23, 24... 24 and 22 fantasy points to start the year last year. I'm willing to set aside that bias for right now, right? I'm willing, like, let's pretend that, like, okay, they did it with Thrash, they can do it with Lacey, right? No, the main issue I have with Lacey is that he is playing a role in this offense that just simply has not been productive in the last 5 years. And when I say not productive, I mean, like, terrifyingly so. He is playing in the slot. And some people might say, oh, maybe he moves to the outside. I don't think it's going to happen. I'll get to that in a second. Let's look at the history of Jeff Brohm's main slot receiver. 2023, last year, Kevin Coleman had 33 targets for 23 receptions and 334 yards and 2 touchdowns. The year before that, Tyrone Tracy, who eventually converted to running back, 36 targets, 26 receptions, 185 yards, 0 touchdowns. The year before that, Jackson Anthrop, the most productive season out of a slot. Jeff Brohm slot wide receiver in the last 5 years, 61 targets, 48 receptions, 509 yards, 5 touchdowns. Jackson Anthrop was the slot before that in 2019, where he got 56 targets, 37 receptions, 340 yards, and 1 touchdown. You have to go all the way back to Rondale Moore and his massive 142 target, 103 reception,
my boy,
1,164 yards and 12 touchdown season to find a productive slot for Jeff Brohm. So the common thread, right, between all of these, between Kevin Coleman, Tyron Tracy, Jackson Anthrop, these are all guys that were third or fourth option in receptions, because I didn't even include the tight end in turn. Like, usually they were like they're third option at receiver, sometimes fourth option, depending on which tight end you looked at during what season. So basically, in order for Lacy to work out, you have to assume either one of two things. One, he's going to move to the outside, or two, he's going to take the Rondale Moore route, where he's clearly the most talented guy in the receiving room and just demands targets because everybody else kind of sucks. There's issue with both of those narratives. One, the outside wide receivers for this team seem pretty set, with Ja'Cory Brooks coming in from Alabama, former four-star guy. He's played outside his entire career. He is set to start again. He's not a guy they're looking to move around. He'll be on the outside. The other option on the outside will be homegrown talent Chris Bell, who also goes into the second point, right? The second point being that, like, Lacy would have to be clearly the most talented guy on this roster to get targets there in the slot. Problem is, if you're asking for the wide receiver that has gotten the most buzz out of spring for this Louisville team, it is Chris Bell. They got a ton of buzz this offseason. We saw him score 2 touchdowns in the spring game, gaining 126 yards in that game, including an 80-yard touchdown. Obviously, spring games are not the end-all, be-all for everything, but it's clear that Louisville also has some talent already on those outside positions, so that means Lacy's not leaving that spot, and there's solid options for this system to go to there. Lacy has been falling further and further down my rankings, and Bell rising higher and higher, to the point where in my latest rankings update, I have now moved Chris Bell ahead of Colin Lacy. Again, just add in the fact that, again, I'm typically already avoidant of G5 transfers to the Power 5 level. I think Louisville's already got their guy in Chris Bell, in which case Lacy might be a horrendous value here at the middle of the 7th round as your third wide receiver option. Nate, what do you think?
I'm in agreement. This is a guy that I almost, when you said, hey, let's give me some guys that you're fading that you do not think are good draft values, when we were planning for this show, Colin Lacy was somebody I strongly considered. I have him currently as my wide receiver 43. So obviously, if he's going off as wide receiver 28, I'm not going to end up with any shares of Colin Lacy. I'm okay with that, because I have come to terms with you in agreement that I don't, unless it's a freak like Rondell Moore, which I don't think Colin Lacy is, I'm probably going to stay away from the slot position. This does feel a lot like when Tracy transferred from Iowa to Purdue, and everybody's like, all right, he's going to play the slot. He's going to, you know, he's going to get force fed in this scheme. And then what was it? Charlie Jones just destroy it on the outside that whole year. So, and everybody invested so much in Tracy.
Yep.
We could be looking at a very similar situation here between Lacy and Bell, or potentially Ja'Cory Brooks. I have my doubts on Ja'Cory Brooks.
Yeah.
I'm in agreement with you here. It's just a little bit too much. I would much rather just say, okay, if I want a piece of this offense and I want a wide receiver, I will draft Chris Bell in the 27th round versus using my 7th round pick on Colin Lacy. And I'll be honest with you, I've seen Lacy go a lot higher than the middle of the 7th round. I've seen him go as high as like late 3rd, early 4th round. So maybe he's starting to kind of slide a little bit, but I think that's good. I think he was just simply going too high. I listened to the summer school series on Louisville with Bud Elliott, and I kept waiting. I kept thinking, okay, they're going to really start to talk about this. We got this transfer from South Alabama. He's going to be incredible. Colin Lacy got mentioned once, and he was just kind of an afterthought in the whole discussion. So it kind of made me as like, okay, I don't think that they're thinking this guy is going to be a big-time breakout candidate.
No, compare that to last year when they couldn't shut up about Jamari Thrash.
Oh, yeah.
Like, right? And like, how many times did Chris Bell get mentioned? I don't know. I haven't listened to the Louisville Summer School yet, but how much?
About the same as Lacey. Okay, like, gotcha. Nobody really stood out in that room. So I kept waiting for, you know, okay, this is going to be our guy. And that never really came.
Nope. Understandable. All righty. Let's move on to our next guy here. By the way, I will throw out there, Nate. Yeah, Chris Bell going wide receiver 69 in drafts, 19th round. So.
That's actually earlier than I thought he was.
I think part of it, I know for a fact John Lobb drafts him in like the fourth or fifth round because he should. I love Lobb to death, but like once he is like set on this is the guy for this system, he doesn't care where he goes in drafts previously. He's like, all right, I'm taking him fourth or fifth round.
My guy.
So, all right, Nate, throw it back over to you. It's time for you to cook again here with a quarterback. We haven't talked about any quarterbacks here today, but you want to talk about Mr. Preston Stone. Currently going as QB 19 in drafts, end of the 9th round here, beginning of the 10th round typically. What's going on here, Nate? He finishes QB 22 last year. That feels like a pretty safe bet.
Yeah, this is similar to Luther Burden. I'm a former like Stone stan. I was team Stone way back when it was supposed to be a battle between him and Mordecai. I was like, I think Stone's gonna win this job. Mm-hmm. He didn't, but you know, I mean, that's how much confidence I had in him. But yeah, that confidence is starting to wane. I think the biggest problem I have with Stone, a lot of the discourse around SMU this offseason has been, oh man, they've got an incredibly easy schedule for the ACC. They're going to win a whole bunch of games their first year in the ACC. And yes, compared to most other P4 programs, it's very easy. But if you compare it to their last year's schedule and what was relative then, it's actually quite a bit more difficult. I think that just based off, and this is preseason rankings, but Phil still has them as like right around like the 75th most difficult schedule, whereas last year it was like 108th.
Oh, wow.
So even though they are moving, like they're got an easy schedule moving up to the ACC. I mean, teams like Pitt, Boston College, Duke, Louisville, those are still more talented defenses and probably better defenses than like 90% of what they faced in the American Athletic Conference. I mean, not to mention now they've got Florida State on their schedule. Here's the deal. They played two Power 5 teams all last year. Two. That's it. It was TCU and it was Oklahoma. His average points per game between those two games, 13.5.
Ooh.
Okay. 13.5. And that's a guy that consistently was putting up mid-20s to upper 20s throughout the entire season. So here's the deal. This year, he has, because they play week zero, where I think it's like Nevada or something like that, there is one G5 or one non P5 team. It's like a Houston Baptist or something like that. There's one non P5 team that is on our P4 now, one non P4 team on the entire schedule for SMU. That's it. And last year there were only two P5 games. So they have three bye weeks because they do play week zero. They play a full on SEC or ACC schedule. And I think the other thing that concerns me is that I just expected him to be more of a dual threat guy, more of a guy that was going to put up a lot of production with his legs. And that hasn't happened. I mean, last year he started 12 games. He had less than 200 yards rushing. So I think the fact that he broke his leg or ankle or whatever last year, I mean, they may kind of keep him, you know, a little bit confined, try to make sure he stays healthy, stays safe. I don't know that we're going to get quite the production everybody's thinking. I would much rather go with some other quarterbacks that are in that range.
No, I was just curious to see, like, again, I'd mentioned he finished his QB 22 last year, and I was curious, like, all right, what happens if we take out one of these games, right? Like, because of the extra bye that they're going to get, which also, by the way, very unfortunate they happen to play Nevada on week zero, because like that would have been an easy 30 points for him probably right there. You take out, he averaged 20 right under 24 fantasy points per game in the games he played last year. You take that away from where he finished, and that immediately drops him down to QB 31 last year, and that's not even accounting for, like you said, the increase in the difficulty of the schedule here, which let's just say he can get just 90% of what he was able to do last year. That puts him down closer to, you're in the QB 40 range. And that's quickly turning into, you're drafting the QB 19 for the QB 40. that upside just isn't there for a guy that you're drafting as your QB2, right? So,
yeah. Yeah, it's just he's somebody that has started to slide down my rankings. Earlier in the year, I probably would have been gung-ho on taking him as QB19, but now there's just some other guys that aren't moving up a level like he is that I would have more confidence in that are going kind of in that same range, you know, like a Grayson McCall or, you know, just even Seth Hennigan, Cam Ward, you know, guys like that. You know, I think I'd rather have in that range.
I'm curious. I'm looking up real quick, see if I can find his monthly ADP, and it has risen a bit. I would say it feels like he's going earlier than he was. Yeah, he was going at the lowest was in March at 127.3. So you're looking at kind of the late 10th round. He's kind of now risen up to the late 11th round. Excuse me. I got my math wrong there. So about two rounds earlier, he's risen about two rounds since then. I don't know. If that's the way he's trending, I'm definitely not going to have very many shares of him moving forward. And again, it's kind of similar deal to like Prichet and a lot of the other guys we talked about, right? Like the quarterbacks that go around him, I'm looking at it here, like who would you rather have, Nate? Preston Stone or Brady Cook?
I'd probably rather have Preston Stone.
Okay, well,
I'm not a Brady Cook fan.
Never mind, I know you're not a Joey Aguilar fan, but Preston Stone or Noah Fifita?
Fifita.
Preston Stone or Nussmeier?
Nussmeier.
Preston Stone or Will Howard?
Preston Stone.
Okay. Preston Stone or Grayson McCall?
McCall.
Okay. So yeah. Similar idea though, right? Like you get to that range and you're kind of looking at like, there's other quarterbacks I'd rather have in this range.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, Nate, your last guy here, you're going to do a little bit hating on Mr. Jonah Coleman, another guy that you used to be pretty into, if I remember correctly, Nate.
Like, yeah, I have been a Jonah Coleman. My whole list is guys other than CJ Baxter. My whole list is guys that I've liked. Like I like these guys, and I thought that they would do really well last year, and they did. But this is college fantasy, and that doesn't always mean that success is going to happen the following year.
For sure. Speaking of that success, Jonah Coleman, after kind of taking over the running back role at one point in the season last year, finished as the RB49 on the season, going RB43 in drafts currently, Nate. Obviously, he transfers from Arizona to Washington, follows Jed Fish, his former coach at Arizona there. Again, given where he finished last year, where he's going in the draft here at RB43, Nate, does this not feel like kind of the right territory for him? What's got you off of him?
I think the biggest concern that I have is Washington. So there was a mass exodus in Washington, right? Most of their team was a very senior laden team. A lot of them went pro. A lot of them transferred after the coaching change when that window reopened. I think the biggest concern that I have is they legitimately might have the worst. And I can't emphasize this enough. The worst offensive line in the Power Four. It lost the entire offensive line. There are no starters back. There's nobody with any real experience back on that offensive line. Anybody they get in the portal is going to be just a shell of what they had last year, which was the offensive line of the year last year. And the fact that he's a big back, maybe a little too big, just based off of some of the reports that I read in the Washington spring camp news. But he's a big back. He's not all that explosive, so his big play potential is limited. He's a guy that needs volume in order to be really effective as a CFF asset. He's not somebody like Ishmael Mahdi or RJ Harvey, who, you know, with 8 carries can still go for 85 yards and 2 touchdowns that can pop on any single run. The fact that Washington's going to be playing from behind probably a lot in conference play this year as they move over to the Big Ten, games going to be slower, and the offensive line is going to be really bad. His volume's going to be limited. This is not like what we saw from Arizona last year. And let's not forget, even still at Arizona, that was a pretty even split lots of times with him and Wiley, the guy that was there with him. So I think that's probably my biggest concern. Not even to add, I mean, we can even add in the fact that let's take a look at Washington's playoff schedule if you haven't yet. It's UCLA. Say what you will about UCLA, but They were incredible against the run last year. They do have an actually legit, but pretty good defensive line. They brought back their stud D tackle that entered the portal. He returned back there. So they're actually really good against the run. Then they have a bye week. Then they have Penn State. If you don't know, Penn State's actually really good against the run too. So yeah, that's a really tough playoff schedule. So even though he's only going as RB43, it's just not a gamble that I'm looking to take there. I like Adam Muhammad, who is another guy that's going to split time. They also have Cam Davis that's there, so I think they've got bodies to where he's not going to be a 175 to 200 carry guy.
I think the one saving grace for him is the fact that he is pretty solid out of the backfield, right? In terms of receptions, right? He had 27 targets last year, 24, 27 targets, 24 receptions, 277 yards. Pretty solid, pretty solid production profile there for receiving. So if they have to rely on him more because of game script to be a guy out of the backfield, which we know for a fact, Will Rogers is not afraid to throw to his running back, given his history with the air raid system.
He does. He is check down Will. That's true.
So like it that could help, and that's where you probably see a little bit of his production kind of come back here. But I agree with you as well. The main concern obviously is just Washington in general. Nate, you mentioned the fact that again, like nobody's coming back. In all of FBS, Nate, where do you think
Last.
dead last?
Dead leg. You're
They're
going to ask about
dead.
returning production,
They're
aren't you?
dead last in returning production, and
Yep, I
in on
wrote the team
offense.
profile and I was like, holy Jesus, they are bad.
It is rough. And even adjusted when you account for the transfers coming in, they're still dead last. They're still dead last. And so, like, at least defense got a little bit better with the adjusted returning profiles. They went from like 109th to 99th. Nope. Offense, they're still screwed.
And that's with like the SEC's all-time passing leader.
Granted, he's replacing Michael Penix, which
Right.
might give him a run for his money, but still, like, yeah,
Yeah.
Washington's in real trouble. They're in real trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you may be right. They are going to have to pass a lot. And Will Rogers, his first read sometimes is his running back, I think, based off of what I saw from his time in Mississippi State. So maybe Coleman can push 40 receptions, but I just don't see a whole lot of production from him as a running back.
All righty. We'll hit on our last guy here, Nate. You have flogged a lot of the guys that you used to like. Well, it's my turn to flog one of the guys that you like. I know you still like him,
Oh, this one
obviously.
pained me. This one pained me when I saw it on the show sheet.
But I'm sorry, I got to bring it up. Now, for those of you who've listened to me, those of you who follow me on Twitter, I have voiced my opinion both again on the show and on Twitter that I'm clearly more worried about the Tim McClain transfer than anybody else in the CFF space. I'll say it quickly here again because it's not actually going to be the crutch of my argument here. I just find it really weird that a guy like McClain, who clearly was going to tra was transferring to start, didn't want to sit another year behind KJ Jefferson, and had other options like Georgia State and Toledo, where he could have been the starter pretty easily, in my opinion, still chose to go to Arkansas State. I agree with the general populace that Butch Jones would be a fool to replace Raynor as QB1, but I think that what should happen definitely isn't always what actually happens. And I don't know, there's just a weird vibe with that transfer that I'm a little afraid of. But that's actually not the crux of my argument here, right? I do think there's other reasons to be concerned about Jalen Raynor this year. And it also, again, goes back to really how the staff kind of treated him down the stretch. During his first two starts, Raynor was an absolute shock to the Sun Belt system, right? Poor Georgia, or poor Southern Miss and UMass had no idea what they were getting into with Raynor. He scored 40 plus points in both those games. They thought that they would be going against JT Stroud. They thought they'd be going against an offense that scored 3 points in three games. That is not me misspeaking. They scored 3 points in three games. And Raynor comes in and just absolutely destroys them. Unfortunately for Raynor, his third start was against Troy, a real defense. And Raynor's performance was poor. No shame in that, though, because Troy's defense was the kind that many Power Four programs that wish that they had. But unfortunately, with that beatdown from Troy, the blueprint on how to slow down Raynor was there and out for all of the Sun Belt to see. And while Raynor still had some good fantasy showings in the weeks of 8 through 10, clearly was not as effective as he once was. Now, granted, again, you go from 40 points per game to 25 points per game. 25 points per game is still pretty solid for CFF. main problem really became apparent when during the final couple of games here. It became very clear to me that Butch Jones became very gun shy with Rainer, especially around the goal line. It really comes down to after that Troy game, Rainer's touchdown to interception ratio was 7-6. So Rainer was turning the ball over in bad situations, and his touchdown numbers greatly reduced the moment that Butch Jones realized, like, hey, we should run the ball instead around the goal line instead of having Jalen Rainer throw it. That way we don't turn the ball over in such a critical place, right? And they had some good running backs that they could do that with. That's how you get Arkansas State putting up 77 points on Texas State and Rainer getting not a single touchdown out of that. It heavily impacted Rainer in his final couple of games. He scored 14.34 fantasy points, 8.54 fantasy points, and 13.62 fantasy points. It was clear the staff did not trust Rainer nearly as much down the stretch to kind of get it done, which also kind of goes back to them bringing in a more experienced guy in Timmy McClain here, even though obviously Rainer has some huge upside if they do unleash him. If that is the status quo now, with Raynor's touchdown upside capped by Jones and staff not wanting to throw the ball in the red zone, and add in the fact they have a legit quarterback too to replace him, if Rainer does not get this turnover troubles under wraps, I sense quite a bit of danger drafting Rainer here as a quarterback two in a lot of teams, right? And some people are waiting to draft him as a QB one. I can understand Rainer, again, going back to my baseball analogy earlier. If you take Rainer as your third quarterback, as a just home run hitter, right? Like, he's the guy that's going to hit the ball, get you a grand slam for your quarterback group. I can get it. But as a quarterback two or sometimes quarterback one, if you're going late quarterback strategy, I can't justify it at all. I think there's a lot to be worried about here. Nate, the look that you're giving me right now either tells me that you're gonna go, I guess you're right, or you're about to absolutely destroy me.
It sure as hell isn't, I guess you're right. I got a lot of thoughts going through my head. I'm gonna try to see if I can align them appropriately here, because you're hurting my soul a little bit here. So first thing I will say is, if you do play in dynasty leagues with me, please listen to what Jared just said there and take that as seriously as a heart attack, and make sure that when you do that, you talk to me about a potential trade. Okay. So first of all, just throwing that out there.
Nate, hold on real quick. Is there a single dynasty league that you are in that you don't have Rainer already?
Yeah, the 2014 or the year in with me, I drafted him last year at the very end of the draft, and then watched that dismantling of Oklahoma beating them 73-0 and him not even sniffing the field, and then watching it happen again in week two. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess Butch is going to be an idiot here and not even give him run. So I eventually dropped him, you know, and of course somebody picked him up and he ends up getting some run, and the rest is history. But so here's the deal. Before this spring, it was Jalen Rainer and a freshman. That was it. That's the only scholarship quarterbacks. They had to add some. I'm surprised they didn't add two quarterbacks from the portal, to be honest with you, just for live bodies. It's a weird situation in which I will actually say the fact that they have a capable quarterback. I'm not gonna say Timmy McClain's awesome. He did look really fun at times against Kansas State last year. But the fact that they have a capable quarterback, I think, might actually be good for Jalen Rainer. It's the same strategy, same theory in my head as Ty Simpson actually looking good this spring might actually be good for Jalen Milroe, because the staff can now look at him and say, let him go. If he gets hurt, we've got somebody behind him. When they saw those first two quarterbacks that Butch Jones ran out there last year play, and then they saw what Jalen Rainer was capable of, they had to have said, dear God, bubble wrap this kid. We can't possibly go back to what we had against Oklahoma and whoever else they played in week two. So now they can at least let him fly. So I kind of actually don't mind that, but I don't think that Timmy McClain doesn't scare me. Again, I'm like a broken record. I've been hyping them up because you need to listen to the G5 Hive. Anybody listening to this needs to listen to the G5 Hive. They've spoke with Arkansas State. There was no indication that Jalen Raynor's job is in jeopardy. Now, obviously, if they struggle, then maybe they could look somewhere else. I'm trying to look at what his initial games are: Central Arkansas, Tulsa, Michigan, Iowa State. So clearly, weeks 3 and 4, there's going to be a problem there. I think Jalen Raynor is really good. I want him on at least half my best ball rosters. I want him on all my dynasty rosters. You're right. Maybe this is too early. I'm going to continue to probably be the guy that takes him where he's going right now.
No, and I totally understand it, right?
That kind of round 9-10 is when right there is where I actually don't mind. The Timmy McClain transfer kind of gave him a little bit of a drop of a couple rounds, which I liked. I don't mind taking him in kind of that 9-10 range. He's not somebody I'm going to reach for anymore, but I kind of like him.
No, I can see it. Again, you're right. I would pull up the numbers here real quick, but I am now speaking, so therefore I don't have the time for that. But no, again, this all assumes, right, that Butch Jones and staff make rational decisions, right?
Right. That's asking a lot.
This is the same staff that ran out JT Stroud as the starting quarterback last year.
Yeah.
Now, granted, they didn't want to start Raynor last year. Again, true freshman, right? Nobody really wants to start true freshman, but like, Stroud and Daly both were like absolute cheeks. Like we're talking absolutely horrendous. And
yep. Raynor needs to develop. He needs to continue to progress as a player.
And he does. And again, that's kind of the main crux of my argument, right? Like, don't undercut the fact that Raynor was struggling with turnovers down the stretch. And unfortunately, a lot of coaches, they don't play fantasy. They care about winning football games. And you want to lose a football game real quick, you turn the ball over a lot. And if Raynor can't fix that, I could see that to me is more of a concern about why Raynor would leave the field than him getting even injured, right? Because you mentioned like McClain kind of would let them run a little bit more. I'm more concerned about Raynor throwing, again, yeah, he's got Central Arkansas, but if he throws two interceptions versus Central Arkansas for whatever reason, like that staff's going to start second guessing themselves real quick.
Yeah, again, Michigan week 3, Iowa State week 4, and then a bye week. Like, if they're going to make a move, that's when it's going to happen. That's when they made their move to Jalen Raynor, right around that same time last year. But I tell you what, Butch Jones, if you're listening to this, you better not do that, because you owe your freaking career right now to Jalen Raynor, because last year was year 3 and you were really working your way towards getting fired. And Jalen Raynor is the only thing that saved your ass from getting fired last year. So you better not make that switch.
I 100% agree with you, Nate. I'm just trying to read the tea leaves as best as any of us can when it comes to these G5 programs. So with that, we have come to the end of our show. I want to thank all of you guys out there for listening. If you have not already, go ahead and leave a like, comment, and a subscribe. If you're watching this on the YouTube, if you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show, leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you check out the rest of the Campus Again Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. Nate, before we get out of here, do you want to promote anything? Obviously, the G5 guys, you've been promoting the whole time. They do fantastic work. But any other things you want to promote before we get out of here?
No, man. As soon as we're done, I'm taking my computer, heading up to the brewery, having a beer, working on the CFF guide. I'm just going to be grinding on that before the holiday break here, man. That's all. I'm focused on freshman impact 50 and player profiles from here on out.
Yes, sir. And I'm looking forward to reading that over and reviewing it and making sure that it is ready for that July 7th release date. Again, with everything else going on, guys, appreciate all of you guys. We'll be back not next week. We are taking, or I'm gonna say, yeah, I'll go ahead and say we'll be off next week because of that holiday weekend. Also, all of us CFF guys deserve a hard-earned break after the grind that we've had for the CFF guys. So we'll be taking off next week. But then the week after that, we'll be back with some great content for you guys. Until then, really appreciate you guys, and hope you have a wonderful and blessed couple of weeks. See y'all.